One of the classic discussions with regards to Parshas Toldos begins at the very beginning. For the first pasuk already contains within it much grounds for investigation. Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid es Yitzchak. So we are being introduced to the children of Yitzchak ben Avraham, who, as the Parsha will discuss at length, as Rashi says, Yaakov ve'esav ha'amurim b'parsha. And then the pasuk essentially goes on to say the same thing backwards. Avraham holides Yitzchak. Well, if Yitzchak is the son of Avraham, then Avraham is holides Yitzchak. I mean, it seems like two ways of saying the same thing. And Rashi comments famously that the Sonei Hador were casting aspersions as to whether Avraham is really the father until Hashem changed Yitzchak's facial features to look like Avram, and then Avram holides Yitzchak. Which means, according to Rashi, interestingly, the second half of the pasuk isn't telling us something we already know, but it's iterating something that became known. It's not further information for us, but it's a further expression of this reality as it became understood by people. But there are other approaches to this Kfelus, this double expression, Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holides Yitzchak, and I'd like to take a look at two of them. And as we'll see, they both address the same words, but with a somewhat different cadence, which could make all the difference. One from the Rishonim, and one from the Acharonim. And we'll begin with the Ramban. Ramban reminds us that Avram Avinu has more than one child. He also has Yishmael. He even has more than Yishmael. He has the Bnei Keturah, who we don't hear that much from after a while. But in any case, Yitzchak is not Avram's only son. And yet, his relationship, as far as the Torah is concerned, with his children is different with Yitzchak than with any of the other children. We find, for example, when Avram is having certain qualms in Parshas Vayera with regards to sending Yishmael away, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, it's the right thing to do, listen to Sarah, she's correct, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Sarah, because ultimately only through Yitzchak will be considered your descendants, will be considered your progeny. And against that background, says Ramban, to have a look at the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah, because there is a toldos, which is of lesser fame, which is Shvi of Parshas Chayei Sarah, Perikafei Pasuk Yud Beis, which is toldos Yishmael. And in fact, the Torah introduces those children with the words, Ve'ele toldos Yishmael ben Avram. Have a bit of a yes and no relationship in terms of Yishmael's connection with Avram. On the one hand, he's been told that only Yitzchak will be considered your son in any meaningful way, your progeny and your descendants, his descendants. But on the other hand, Yishmael is, at least biologically, referred to yet in the Parsha as Yishmael ben Avraham. In fact, something that I have not seen fully is that even in Parsha's Bayera, when Avram is told, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Zarah, it's only Yitzchak, the very next pasuk talks about Yishmael and says, V'gam es ben ha'oma l'goyasimenu, I will also make the son of Hagar into a great nation, Ki zarachahu, because he's your descendant. Which seems to be a reversal even from one pasuk to the very next. The first pasuk says, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Zarah, seeming to sideline Yishmael completely, which is, as far as we know, is the case. The very next pasuk says about Yishmael, Ki zarecha hu, he seems to be back. But of course he's not back. And yet, there is some connection that is recognized by the Torah, at least a biological connection. So the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah is Ve'ele toldos Yishmael. The beginning of toldos is Ve'ele toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. And therefore, says Ramban, lest we think that the Torah at this point is perhaps subsequently equated him, as if to say, you've got told us Yishmael ben Avram, you've got told us Yitzhak ben Avram. Perhaps by this stage they're all the same. To that end, the Pasuk reiterates that they are not the same. And with the words, Avram holid es Yitzhak, as if to say, in the ways that count and in the relationships that are meaningful as far as the Torah is concerned, Avram begat Yitzhak, meaning, and only Yitzhak, that primacy and exclusivity remains. So to summarize, according to the Ramban, Yitzhak ben Avram is telling us Yitzhak is the son of Avram. Avram holiness, Yitzhak is telling us that only Yitzhak is considered to be the son of Avram. Once again, ki b'Yitzhak yikar lechazara. A rather different approach, although we'll see how it harmonizes with the Ramban, is to be found much closer to our time in the writings of Rav Mordechai Gifter Zatzal, the Rosh Hashiva of Telz, in his Sefer Pirkei Torah. And he kind of comes from the other direction. And he notes that every son will be connected to his father, he'll be miyuchas after his father, because and his parents, because they're the ones that gave birth to him, they're the ones that begat him. But then the question is, moving back, past the parents, to the grandparents, and beyond. I mean, what's the nature of the relationship between a child and his grandparents? And in a sense, they didn't beget him. It's true that they beget his parents, who then beget him. Is it a disconnect, or is it a klishlishi, to borrow the expression, in the sense that there's no essential connection, but it's rather a series of sub-connections? Is that the case? Well, the Mefarshim state that actually every child is essentially considered to have been begat by all of his ancestors. And the reason why is because they begat their child, who then has the latent life of all of his descendants, which then bears fruit in another generation, another generation. But in a sense, in a compacted form, they all exist within the earlier ancestors. So when one has a child, he brings that life in, but he brings that life with the capacity for further life as other generations ensue. And therefore, we say, for example, Bnei Bonim, Harehim Kebonim, grandchildren are like children, because when the father has the child, in a sense, he also has the grandchild, because he brings that capacity for potential to develop into the world as well, which is very interesting. However, there will be a caveat which is almost always inoperable. Namely, this would only be true if the child has a natural capacity to have children, because then in that capacity, he's been brought into the world with that capacity, and therefore all of his children will be connected backwards to the earlier generations, the progenitors. When we come, for example, to Avram, so we have an interesting situation, because Avram, as Rashi tells us in Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram einon molid, Avraham molid, Avram was not naturally born with the capacity to have children, and neither was Sarah. So this is very interesting, because if that's true, then in a sense, when Terach has Avram, you can't say that Terach also brought into the world the potential for further generations. There was no potential as Terach brought it into the world for other generations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a nes, performed a nes for Avram, and generated from the start the ability for Avram to have children, but that was not part of what Terach brought into the world. And what that means is the descendants of Avram will be able to trace themselves back to Avram, because when Avram brought Yitzhak into the world, he did so with the potential for all future generations, etc. But it will never go back to Terach, because the connection stopped. It was a cold drop. It was the end of the line when Avram came into the world. That comes in as the end of Terach's line. Avram, in a sense, receives a new line, but he is the beginning of that line. And interestingly, we never refer to ourselves, even nominally and even in a general sense, as Bnei Noach, for example. Of course, we use that term for the general world population, Bnei Noach. But one may ask, well, are we not also Bnei Noach? In this respect, we're not. Because as much as Noach brought his children into the world who had the capacity for etc. And forward 10 generations until Avram, and there it stopped. So Avram's children are not descended from Noach in that respect. And in fact, Reb David Tevel Zatzal, one of the great Talmidim of Reb Chaim Volozhin, in his Drushas, Nachlas David, he explains that this is what the Gemara means in the second parak of Maseches Brachos and Daf Tetzayin, Tesvav Tetzayin, when it says, Ein Koren La'Avos Ela L'Shlosha. We do not refer to anyone other than three personalities when we use the term Avos, our ancestors, our fathers, namely Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the question is, well, who are we looking to exclude? I mean, they are the Avos. No one else is the Avos. I mean, what are we looking to emphasize or to infer? And generally, people understand that what we mean to say is Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But then once you get into the generation of the Shvatim, generation number four, they're no longer Avos. As if to say, we mention these three generations and not afterwards. There's no more Avos after that. But the Nachlas David says that part of what we're saying is that there are no Avos before that. In other words, when we think of our ancestors, it doesn't go back any further than Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov for the reasons that we explained with regards to Avram's natural incapacity to have children and his miraculously generated capacity to have children. He is the beginning of the line. And part of what this represents is that, as we know, the ancestors, they bequeath their genetic code and their characteristics and their tendencies into their descendants. By beginning with Avram, it cuts away any of the negative characteristics from the earlier generations. And moreover, this is true not only of Avram, who begins the Jewish people, but all of the Imahos, as we know. It's a painful thing in its own way that they're all Akaros, right? They can't naturally have children, because as each one comes in its generation, Rivka in generation 2, Rachel and Leah in generation 3, they are ceasing their connection with the families that they had before, as they become the beginning in their way of the Jewish people. And in fact, says Rav Gifter, if we watch carefully, we may see that this idea is to be found in Balaturim. Balaturim, as we have him, his introductory comments, which is known as the Balaturim, are very often gematrias and the like. But there's also comments of parshanut nature, and it states in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayetar Yitzchak Lashem, Lenochach Ishto. Yitzchak davens fervently, incessantly to Hashem regarding his wife, Ki Akarahi. For she was barren. And the Balaturim comments, Ve'istidorish Lomar, he velohu. Some explain, they read the Pasuk, Ki Akara, he, the Pasuk is emphasizing and stressing that she was an Akara, and Yitzchak was not. Meaning he was naturally capable of having children, Rivka wasn't, and that's where the tefillah needed to come in. Dehoksiv, and confirmation of this idea, says Balaturim, is because, doesn't the Pasuk say, Ki v'Yitzchak ikari l'chazara, for through Yitzchak will be your descendants? Alma, from which we see, Lav Akar Haya, we see that he was not incapable of having children, because Hashem says to Avram, through Yitzchak, you will have your descendants. The question is, how did that verse tell us that Yitzchak was naturally capable of having children? After all, perhaps he was naturally incapable, but Hashem performed a nace for him, just like he did for Avram and then for Rivka. So the very fact that Yitzchak will have children doesn't tell us he was naturally able to have children, that he wasn't an Akar. How then can we see from that pasuk what the Balaturim is saying? So Gifter explains, because if you look at the pasuk, it doesn't say that Yitzchak will have children. It says, your descendants will come through Yitzchak. says Balaturim, that must mean that Yitzhak was naturally capable of having children. Because if he wasn't, and Hashem performed an ace for him, then his children would not be considered Avram's children. Because Avram's relationship with Yitzhak as the end of his line would be similar to Terach's relationship to Avram as the end of his line. So even if Yitzhak had children, but he would be the beginning of that line, they'd be considered descended from Yitzhak, but no further back, even to Avram. And therefore, if we see the subtlety of what the Balaturim is drawing out from that pasuk, if the pasuk says not only Yitzhak will have children, but Yitzhak's children will be your descendants talking to Avram, that means that when Avram brought Yitzhak into the world, he did so that he brought Yitzhak with the natural capacity to have children as well. And hence, says the Balaturim, Akara he, that's the emphasis on Rivka, and that's where they needed to daven so fervently. And therefore, says Rav Gifter, if we go back to the opening pasuk, and again we have this double expression, the Eile told us Yitzhak ben Avram, Avram holis Yitzhak, and again everything has been stated in the first half of the pasuk. Why repeat it? Says Rav Gifter, the repetition and the reiteration is in order to emphasize, yes, Yitzhak is the son of Avram, but there's more to it than that. There's another point that needs to be stressed here. Avram holiness Yitzhak. Avram begat Yitzhak. And that's more than what was said in the first half. Because what we're saying here is that Avram, and only Avram, is considered to be the progenitor of Yitzhak. Meaning, no further back than Avram. Not to Terach, and not beyond. So it's very interesting to see how these two Perushim, in a sense, they're both addressing the same issue of the second half of this opening pasuk, but each one, in a sense, lays emphasis on a different part of that phrase, if we could summarize maybe in this way, that for the Ramban, that it's about the exclusivity of Yitzchak as Avram's child, so the emphasis is on Avram holid es Yitzchak, meaning Yitzchak and only Yitzchak. For Rav Gifter, that it's coming to exclude anyone earlier than Avram, the way to read the phrase is Avram holid es Yitzchak, and only Avram holid es Yitzchak. So these are some of the Parshanut discussions regarding the Yitzchak himself and his relationship to Avram and the beginning of Parshas Toldos. I'd like to move from there to a classic discussion which has many, many branches, not all of which we'll cover, but in the beginning of Pasuk Kaf, Perek Kaf Vav. The beginning of Perek Kaf Vav, which is yet at the end of Rishon, we have the famine in the land. Yitzchak goes down to the land of Plishtim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Yitzchak and gives him brachos, and he lays much of the credit for this in the stature of Avram. In Pasuk Hey, after he's given the brachos, in Pasuk Dalet V'Beisi Asaracha V'Nasati L'Zachar Eskalo Tosael V'Zbaruch Hu V'Zaracha, all good things promised to Yitzchak. Why? Interestingly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't put it down to Yitzchak, but down to Avram. Akev, because Asher Shama Avraham B'Koli, because Avram listened to my voice, that's why you're getting all these brachos. Vayishmor Mishmarti, he guarded my guarding. Mitzvosai, Chukos Sarasai, my mitzvos, my statutes, and my Torahs. And the specific component parts of this pasuk about Avram have caught the attention of everyone from Chazal onwards. It's a lot of things Avram is described as doing right. He listens to Hashem, he guards his guard, he keeps his mitzvahs and his chukim and his Torah. That's a lot of terms, and there's a lot to say. And if we follow with Rashi, firstly, Rashi gives us definitions for each of these terms. We begin at the beginning. Shema Avraham Bekoli, Avram listened to my voice, says Hashem. Rashi explains, Kishinisisi Oso, when I tested him. That's Avram directly responding to Hashem's voice as he tells things that are specifically true for Avram, required of Avram. Then, says Rashi, Vayishmor Mishmarti, he guarded my guarding, Gezeros. This refers to protective measures. Laharchaka, to distance people, alas harashiba Torah, from violating the commands of the Torah. To be on guard. Mishmarti, kagon, for example, shnius la'rayos, shvus la'shabbos, expanding the spectrum of, or the scale of forbidden relationships, expanding forbidden activities on Shabbos to include even things that could lead to malacha. These are classic derabbanan protective measures. And then Rashi explains mitzvosai, chukosai, which we'll come back to, and torosai. By the time we're finished, this is the basis for what the Gemara tells us, that Avram kept the Torah before it was given. So says the Gemara in two places, in Maseches Yuma and Daf Kaf Ches Amud Beis, and it's based on this pasuk, Mitzvosai, Rishmarti, Mitzvosai, Chukosai, Sorosai, essentially covers the gamut of Dinei Torah, and the Gemara also says it in the end of Maseches Kiddushin. Now the Gemara only says it about Avram, the Medrash will say it about Yitzhak and Yaakov as well. And what is the theme here? After all, we know that they were not commanded to keep the Torah, but somehow they volunteered. I mean, what's the idea of volunteering? It's for extra points. They don't yet have mitzvahs. I mean, why are they enlisting themselves in performance of the mitzvahs? But as the Mefarshim explain, at the end of the day, Ramchal discusses this at length in the Sefer Derech Hashem, the mitzvahs are what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given in order to allow for the greatest spiritual perfection of the person. They're not random or commands for the sake of it. There is that element to them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands the Jewish people, as the Pasuk says, L'tov lanu kol hayomim. That is the ultimate benefit and development of the soul, is the mitzvahs. And things that are of detriment to the soul are the averas. Avram and then Yitzhak and Yaakov, through their sensitivity and their spiritual awareness, intuited without being told the program of Tariq mitzvahs. As they developed a sense of what is good for them and what is not good for them, they naturally began then to keep the mitzvahs in whatever form was applicable at that time and shy away from the averus. That's before the second element of the command, mitzvahs, what we call the command, came into play. It was purely an issue of knowing what's good for them. And we'll come back to that Gemara about the obvious keeping Taryak. But in the meanwhile, I'd like to just go back to Rashi and offer a number of observations from the Mefarshim on this Rashi. The Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, at the very beginning, Yishakeinu Minishikos Piyu, Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin, right? Your love is greater than wine. Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. The Gemara in Maseches Erevin, Daf Lamed Hei, explains that Dodecha here refer to the Mitzvahs Derabbanan, the love of Mitzvahs Derabbanan. And Yayin, the wine, is the wine of Torah. Which leads us to quite a startling conclusion, because the Pasuk says, Tovim Dodecha Miyayin. The love is greater than wine. That means that in some respect, the mitzvahs derabbanan are more beloved to Hashem than his own mitzvahs, so to speak, that he gave in the Torah. Arevim divrei sofrim, yosem miyena shel Torah. Now, how can that be? I mean, as valuable as they are, they can never be more valuable than the real thing. But as the Ran explains, and in the Drushas, and similarly Rabbeinu Yonah and the Shari Tshuva, the Pasuk doesn't say they're more important. It says that they're more a raven. There's something very pleasant about them. There's something very beautiful about them. But what is that? I mean, they're further restrictions, further prohibitions. Where is the arevus? Except these Rishonim, the Ran and Rabbeinu Yonah, explain that in a sense, if we keep the mitzvahs, which of course we need to, so that's the command. Difficult to know how we feel about the mitzvahs. And we do the mitzvahs and we keep away from our averus. Along come the Rabbanon, and they set up these protective enactments, and that itself is a message. That's an attitude. And that attitude is, it's so important for us not to violate a mitzvah, that we're prepared to even create a buffer zone or protective fence around it to ensure that we never come near to violating a mitzvah. That's a statement. That's a statement of approach and attitude. That's where we're demonstrating how important the mitzvahs are. If someone tells you don't do something and you don't do it, you'll never know how important it is. Just because you didn't do it. But and if you did, you never know, because you don't. But if you take care not to do it, if you take extra precautions that it shouldn't come to it, that already expresses how precious it is to you, how dear it is to you. And that's why the Divrei Sofrim, in their own way, are Aravim. Because if we keep Hashem's mitzvahs, that means that we keep the mitzvahs and we don't do the Averis. But if we refrain from other things, lest we come to do the Averis, that's a message really of love to Hashem. That's how important the mitzvahs are to us. And that's especially beloved to Hashem. Tovim dodecha miyayin. That's an important insight into what the mitzvahs derabbanan and isurim derabbanan are about. Says the Maskil of David, what's that? What does this have to do with us in Parshas Toldos? Note something interesting. Avram is described as keeping the Torah before it was given. Interestingly, the very first thing that he is described as doing is Vayishmor Mishmarti. And Vayishmor Mishmarti, according to Rashi, refers to Gezeros Laharchoka, the protective measures to distance a person from Avera. Now, didactically, or you can't have a protective measure against the Avera without the Avera. So, intuitively, we would have thought, first say he kept the mitzvahs, and then he kept even more than the mitzvahs. You can't have a protective measure without the thing it's protecting against. And it's reversed. The very first thing that's mentioned is Vayishmor Mishmarti. Says the Maskil of David, this is the illusion of the Torah, of the beloved nature of Divrei Sofrim, that it gets the first mention, even before we get to the mitzvahs themselves. First thing, Vayishmor Mishmarti, the Gezeros Laharchok. So that's a very beautiful comment of the Maskil of David, to see what's explicit in the Gemara is implicit, and there for us in the Psukim themselves. The next terms, mitzvosai, chukosai, v'torosai, they sound quite similar to each other. Mitzvos and chukim, well, Rashi tells us, and I think the words of Rashi are well known, that there's a difference between mitzvos and chukim. In Rashi's words, mitzvos are, after all, chukim are a subcategory of mitzvos, so then how can they be two separate things? But rather, mitzvos specifically refer to dvarim she'ilu lo nichtavu, ru'uyim heim lehitzdavos. These are intuitive mitzvahs. Even had they never been given, a moral person keeps away from them. Kegon, gezel, shpichas damim, robbery, bloodshed. These are mitzvahs that the seichel can relate to. Although that's also something of an endangered species nowadays, but in principle. And then chukosai are the opposite to that. Dvarim, things that we would not have intuited ourselves, not on a moral level or not on a societal level. Dvarim she yetzahara v'umas sa'olam meshivin aleihem. Things that the yetzahara always responds to, as if to say, you know, what's this all about? Kegon achilas chazir, levishas shatnez. And not, eating kosher versus non-kosher, Rashi says, is a chok, interestingly. Although there's many explanations given for keeping away from non-kosher food, the bad effect that it has, but Rashi considers it to be a chok. At the end of the day, that's food, that's food. All of the deleterious effects of non-kosher food may, as far as Rashi is concerned, are the result of the fact that the Torah says you can't eat it. But that's not why the Torah says you can't eat it, folk. Shatnas, woolen linen, difficult to understand. Right there in the chukim, we know of other chukim, paraduma. So Rashi has thus explained how you have two categories, mitzvos and chukim. Mitzvos are intuitive, rational, and chukim are irrational or super rational. And that distinction, I believe, is well known. But it's important to mention a caveat here of the Mizrahi, of Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi. For as we know, whenever we see the word chukim and someone asks us, well, you know, what does chukim mean specifically? And you see the word chok, it refers to a mitzvah that is beyond our understanding. Says the Mizrahi, that's not always true. What's important to realize is that we will only talk about the specific connotation of the word chok in that way when it features together in the pasuk with other words that are similar. As if to say, really, the word mitzvahs, for example, is a watchword for all mitzvahs. And so is toros, and so is chukim. They could be interchangeable with each other. If you ever saw just one of them, you're not yet entitled to pick up on the specific connotation of that word, because chukim can refer to the Torah generally. They are laws. It's only when you begin to have a container with more than one of these terms in it, which means clearly they're not meant anymore to cover everything, because then you just mentioned one of them. Once there's a few of them, two or more, once you have not only chukim, but mitzvos and chukim, and mitzvos and chukim and Torahs, then they bounce off each other. Then they bring out the specific connotation within each other. It's a very important parshanut observation. And says the Mizrahi, I'll prove it to you. If we insist that the word chok always means a mitzvah whose reason is not known to us, well, let's consider. In Parshas Emor, in the end of Perek Kaf Gimel of Vayikra, we have the mitzvah of sukkah. What would we say? Is the mitzvah of sukkah a chok, a mitzvah whose reason is beyond us? Well, the Torah calls it a chok. Chukas olam tichaguhu b'chodesh eshvi. It's a chukas olam. Sounds like we have no idea what the mitzvah is about. Except the very next pasuk goes on to tell us what the mitzvah is about. Basukos teishvu leman, in order yedu derasechen kibasukos oshavti. So it says the Mizrahi, if we insist that the word chok, whenever it appears, will always have the connotation of a mitzvah whose reason we don't understand, how will you explain that the Torah used that term and then went on to give you the reason? Rather, says Mizrahi, that's what I'm saying. There, it just used the word chukas. So chukas is interchangeable with mitzvahs and Torahs, and you're not yet entitled to bring out the unique a characteristic of the word chok, if it's there by itself. It's only here, and in fact the Mizrahi lists all of the occasions where Rashi makes this comment. It must be half a dozen throughout the Torah of chok, the reason whose reason we don't understand. In all of those situations, there are other words in that pasuk that they bring out, they highlight that aspect of chok. But if it's chok by itself, it's just another word for mitzvah. That is the opinion of the Mizrahi, and well worth being aware of. I'm not saying that no one disputes the Mizrahi there, but Mizrahi is important even if people dispute him. And finally, we get to Torosai. The final, we've spoken about Mishmarti, protective measures, Mitzvosai, Chukosai, intuitive, counterintuitive, and then Torosai, which is in the plural, which is very interesting. What is the Torah doing in the plural? My Torahs, says Rashi, Lahavi Torah Shebal Peh, Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. There's two Torahs, there are two Torahs. There's the written Torah, there's the oral Torah. Interestingly, for Avram Avinu, none of it was written. It was all oral Torah. But the definitions, as we know them, are Torah Shebichav and Torah Shebal Peh. That's Torosai. But we should note further, within Rashi, that he defines Torah Shebal Peh as Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. The oral law is given to Moshe at Sinai, Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. Now the reason why that's very significant is because actually Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai refers to rules that were given to Moshe which have no basis in the written text of the Torah whatsoever. Like Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkos and various others, Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. It's very interesting that Rashi gave us this definition of the oral law as Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, because there's a great deal in between that and the written Torah. What do we call Torah Shebichtav and what do we call Torah Shebal Peh? It's an interesting shaila. As if to say, Torah Shebichtav, of course, is the words and their straightforward meaning. That's safely in the realm called Torah Shebichtav. Chumash with Rashi, let's say, even though it draws heavily on Torah Shebal Peh. But the Chumash with its basic pshat, let's call that the written law. And then on the other extreme, in the other pole, you have this pure oral law, which isn't connected to the written law at all. Halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. But there's a whole domain in between, which is the entire area of how halacha is derived from the psukim, what we call drash, medrash halacha. We darshan halacha, it's Rabbi Shmuel's famous 13 principles, b'shloshes hamidos, hatorah nedreshes b'hem. And this is an interesting shaila. How would we categorize that? If you look at the pasuk, ayin tachas ayin, and what does that mean? On a simple level, an eye for an eye. Now we know, and we can demonstrate, that it really means money. That explanation, is that Torah shebichtav, because it's about the pasuk, or is it Torah shebal peh, because you'd never get it from a straight reading of the pasuk? Kind of in between. Rashi, by giving us such a restricted definition of Torah shebal peh as the oral law given to Moshe, halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, pure oral law, completely disconnected, seems to be indicating that anything that's connected to the pasuk or based on the pasuk is Torah shebichtav. That's an important statement. In fact, not only is it good to know from Rashi, it's probably a dispute in the Gemara. Because the Gemara gives us two opinions, that itself is not a chiddush, but difficult to understand why there's a dispute about this. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin on Daf Samach quote machlokas between two of the rabbis of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar. Is most of the Torah Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebal Peh? That's the machlokas. One says the Torah is rubo bichtav, most of Torah is written law. And the other says, no, most of Torah is oral law. Well, I don't know, go to a library and check. I mean, weigh them up, see how much is written, see how much is not written, then you'll know. How can there be a machlokas about this? Rabbi Chiel Heller, in the introduction to his Sefer Shelos HaTshuvos Amudei Or, explains that actually what's at stake here in this rather obscure-sounding machlokas is this very question. Because the vast bulk of what Chazal talk about in Torah is how to darshan the psukim. And that's really their question. That massive area called Medrash Halacha, is that Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebal Peh? If it's Torah Shebichtav, then most of Torah is Torah Shebichtav. If it's Torah Shebal Peh, most of Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. So it's interesting that actually not only is the everything is a machlokas, everything is under discussion in the Gemara, including how to categorize and define what is Torah Shebal Peh as opposed to Torah Shebichtav. At any rate, having discussed some comments on Rashi's explanation, we go back to the basic idea, which we mentioned is twice in the Gemara and in the Medrash elsewhere, that the Avos kept Taryak, to the extent that they could. And this, of course, led to a famous question. I'm not sure who was the first one to ask it, but many people do. The Ramban here raises a shaila. If we say that the Avos voluntarily elected to keep the Torah before it was given, well, there is a mitzvah in the Torah, or more correctly, an Aveira, against marrying two sisters. Now, it's not of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, but it is one of the 365 negative prohibitions of the Torah. And if that's the case, then Yaakov married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. How can that be squared with the notion that Yaakov kept, like all the Avos, kept the Taryag Mitzvahs? That's a famous question, and the Ramban's answer here is equally famous. Namely, says Ramban, in his understanding, the entire idea, this well-known idea that the Avos kept Taryag Mitzvahs even before it was given, was specifically when they were in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laretz. And the reason why, which is a slightly modified version of what we said before, the reason why, is because they understood that it's the nature of Eretz Yisrael that you need to keep the Taryag Mitzvahs there. It's Hashem's land. You're in Hashem's land, you've got to keep Hashem's law. He hasn't given it, but if you know it, you've got to keep it. Not so in Chutz Laretz. Ad kedei kach. Eretz Yisrael requires Taryag Mitzvahs. As my uncle, Rav Kuperman often says, "Schar dira in Eretz Yisrael." Right? What is one give to live in Eretz Yisrael X number of dollars per month plus 613 mitzvahs. That's what it takes to live here. And this is something the Ramban develops at length in many places in his Perush on the Torah. And therefore, when Yaakov married Rachel and Leah, they were in Chutz La'aretz. It then gets complicated as they come back. And indeed, we know that Rachel died soon after they came back to Eretz Yisrael. But the original marriage was in Chutz La'aretz. And in Chutz La'aretz, there was no notion of keeping Tariag Mitzvahs. Well, this is the position of Ramban. Now, Ramban says, I've scoured the literature of Chazal in the Medrash. I have found one Medrash which would seem to indicate not like what I'm saying, that they kept Taryag even in Chutz La'aretz. But I'll explain to you why it's not a problem. He refers us to the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Miketz, that Yosef kept Shabbos in Mitzrayim, commenting on the words, U'tevoach tevach v'hachein, that Yosef says, v'hachein, get ready, says the Medrash. Yosef means, it's Friday now. Make all the Shabbos preparations, because Yosef keeps Shabbos. Says the Ramban, Mitzrayim is not Eretz Yisrael. I'm saying that there's only an idea of keeping Tariq Mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. Why is Yosef keeping Shabbos, even in Mitzrayim? Says Ramban, I would say that Shabbos is an exception, and Yosef is an exception. As if to say, there's more to Shabbos than, quote-unquote, just keeping a mitzvah. Shabbos is about preserving an awareness, a consciousness of kisheshes yomim, masor, shemes ha-shamayim, masoret. It's about a basic emunah. And in the lion's den of Avodah Zorah in Mitzrayim, I can understand why Yosef would be makbid, that his children would keep Shabbos for the basic emunah that you need there. But I see that as an exception, says Ramban. The principle is, like I say, only in Eretz Yisrael. Thus far from Ramban. Now, I have to say that for a while I was bothered by another medrash, which would seem to threaten the Ramban much more than Yosef keeping Shabbos. I was bothered by that medrash, and I was further bothered by the fact that Ramban doesn't talk about it. And I'll tell you what it is. But I believe that Medrash too can be reconciled with the Ramban. Not only can it be reconciled, I actually feel that it's ultimately support for the Ramban. What am I referring to? In the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov says, Ko tamar avdecha Yaakov, im lavan garti v'ichar adata. Im lavan garti, I sojourned with Lavan. Now, Rashi there gives us two explanations. One is pshat and one is medrash. The pshat is garti, I was there, I was a lightweight personality, etc. Garti. But the second perush, well known to us, says Rashi, garti is taryag. Im lovan garti, taryag mitzvah shamarti. Even with love, and I'm keeping taryag mitzvahs. Why would Esau be interested to know that Yaakov has been keeping 613 mitzvahs? That's a Vayishlach discussion. But for our purposes, Yaakov, and it's based in a Medrash, is claiming and stating that he's kept 613 mitzvahs. Again, to the extent that he could. And there it becomes even more problematic, because there's at least one mitzvah, without putting too fine a point on it, that he didn't keep, which is marrying two sisters, which you can explain, but then why say that you keep 613 mitzvahs? It means where applicable. In any event, we see there that Yaakov is keeping in Chutz La'aretz all of the 613 mitzvahs. That would seem to be a very threatening medrash for the position of Ramban, that there is basically no notion of keeping Tariq mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz, any of them, beyond the Sheva Mitzvah Plenoch, on a voluntary basis. However, after much deliberation, I believe the matter can be resolved in a very interesting way. You see, I think there's another question here, which is important as well. Im lavan garti, and they kept taryak. Generally speaking, it's recommended for us, because it's a much more cohesive and healthy approach, that if you have a pshat, a word that has pshat, and then it has a drash, there's going to be some type of connection between the Pshat and the Drash. The Vilna Gaon says at the end of the day, all levels of understanding Torah, Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sot, are various emanations of the same thing. Which means that you can't have such a complete disparity or disconnect between the Pshat of the word, on the one hand, and then the Drash of the word. As if to say, by day, the word Degarti has a Pshat meaning, and it means I sojourned. And then at night, it turns into a Gematria, and it means Tarek Mitzvahs, and it has a split personality. And never the twain shall meet. By the time it wakes up the next morning, it's just Pshat again. And it should bother us. Because Garti is the carrier for Taryak. Why is that so? But I believe that what's contained in here is the following. Ramban has stated, the idea of keeping Taryak Mitzvahs is only really in the, before Matan Torah is only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, there's no need yet because they haven't been commanded. But let us ask, okay, but is there ever a reason to keep Taryag Mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz? And I think the answer is yes, if you're planning on going back to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, if the Mitzvahs are vitally important in Eretz Yisrael, even before the Torah is given, they may not be critical in Chutz La'aretz, but you don't want to be falling out of practice, because when you come back to Eretz Yisrael, you want to be in the Mitzvahs. Lahavdil, I mean, Bin Kodesh Kodesh, there's a very famous Sifrei, which says that even after the Torah was given, mitzvahs are kept in Golos, seemingly in order not to fall out of practice when you come back to Eretz Yisrael. That's a much more strident statement, which needs to be explained, which the Ramban does explain in Acharemos, because they're full commandments in Chutz La'aretz. But in any event, prior to this, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, there's no inyan per se to keep Taryag Mitzvahs voluntarily. But if you always have in mind that pretty soon I'll be back in Eretz Yisrael, so you want to keep in practice. And how does this help us? Because the word Garti, as on a Pshat level, means to sojourn, and it specifically has a connotation of being temporary, as opposed to Yashavti. Yashavti means that I'm there to stay. Garti means I'm not here to stay. So now we see how Garti, on a Pshat level, really is the carrier for Taryak. Because Yaakov is saying, I kept Taryak Mitzvahs. You're probably wondering, why am I keeping Taryak Mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz? The answer is, because Garti. Because I never saw myself as settling there. I was always thinking of coming back. I don't want to fall out of practice. Which means, in a sense, one could reconcile this with the Ramban, and it even confirms the Ramban, that Yaakov is keeping Taryag Mitzvahs, but Garti is only Taryag, because Garti is all Garti. So this is the famous position of Ramban, and interesting, just to conclude this discussion, although the discussion is not concluded, because there's an entire literature, as you can imagine, on the Ovis keeping Taryag, the whole of Chumash Bereishis now needs to be relearnt halachically. But the Gemara actually says that Avram Avinu kept the entire Torah, afilu Erev Tavshilin. The whole thing, even Erev Tavshilin. So that, of course, is very interesting. And the Gemara has caught the attention of all the Mefarshim, because Vosepes Erev Tavshilin. Of all the things that you can mention, afilu, even, why is Erev Tavshilin considered to be the nth degree of keeping Taryag? Of course, it's Drabanan, which is again Rashi's idea that he even kept the Drabanans, but it's been singled out for special mention. If you want to know how much, to what degrees the Ovis kept the Torah before it was given, even Erev Tavshilin. Interesting. Well, based on the Sefer Arvei Nachal, we can perhaps understand that Erev Tavshilin is the ideal mitzvah to describe the Ovis as keeping, because that's what their relationship with Taryag was all about. See, what is Erev Tavshilin? Erev Tavshilin, when Yom Tov falls before Shabbos, so it's a way of preparing, allowing you to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Okay. Says the Arvei Nachal, most beautifully, the tkufa of the Avos was like Yom Tov, preparing for Shabbos of Matan Torah. And by that we mean, the Avos were yet preparing the groundwork for the Jewish people to receive the Torah. That's why, say the Mefarshim, the Torah was not given to them, because Derech Eretz Kodma La Torah. You need that time of Derech Eretz, all primacy is given to developing midos and correct behavior and moral outlook and all of those things. That's allowed to develop without any type of framework. It's its own enterprise. That's what the Avos give. And that's why, says Afutner in the Pachad Yitzhak for Hanukkah, that's why they're called the Avos. Because parents, they instruct their children how to behave. It's the teacher that instructs the child how to learn. It's very interesting that of the major figures in the Torah that we relate to, on the one hand, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and then Moshe, each one has a term. They're not the same. Avram is Avram Avinu. Yitzhak Avinu. Yaakov Avinu. Moshe is Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because he taught us Torah. Avram is not Avram Rabbeinu. Or Rabbeinu Avram. And Moshe isn't Moshe Avinu. I mean, though that division is clear. And because the Avos were Avos, they're bringing up their children to be ready for Moshe Rabbeinu to teach them Torah. And therefore, the regimen of Tariq Mitzvahs was not yet given until Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim. The difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos is that there's an aspect of Yom Tov specifically that's much more the product of the initiative of the Jewish people. It's much more elective in that way. Specifically, what day should be Yom Tov? As we know, it's the Beis Din that decides what day is Yom Tov. It's not given to them. Obviously, the rules are given once you decide when Yom Tov is. But we say on Yom Tov, Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. As the Gemara explains in the 7th Perek of Brachos, Hashem is Mekadesh Yisrael, and Yisrael are Mekadesh the Zmanim. As opposed to Shabbos, where we say Mekadesh HaShabbos. It's direct. Everything about Shabbos is done. And therefore, the time of the Avos, where they were using more of their initiative in order to develop Midos with less rules, they have the Shem Mitzvah Bnei Noach, but with less rules, in order to pave the way for their descendants. That's a Yom Tov type of time. It's more about what the Avos did. And interestingly, there's a lot of associations between the Yomim Tovim and the Avos, the Shalosh Regalim and the Shalosh Avos. But at the end of the day, they're preparing for Shabbos. That is to say, when the Torah comes in, so then it's much more defined, much more regimented, and now that you have your Yom Tov preparation, you're able now to move into Shabbos. The preparation from Yom Tov to Shabbos is done through Erev Tevshilin. That's why the relationship of the Avos to Torah before Matan Torah is described in that way, as Erev Tevshilin. So that's a very beautiful interpretation of the Arvei Nachal. Well, we have really just a few minutes left. But perhaps we'll mention briefly, with regards to the brachos that we haven't gone near yet, the Yaakov taking the brachos from Yitzchak, we see that there's quite a difference of opinion between Yitzchak and Rivka as to who should get the brachos. Yitzchak wants to give to Esau, Rivka says no. That's not a good idea. Yaakov should rather get them. It's a very difficult difference of opinion. And apparently there was no bridging that gulf. Because Rivka felt that the only way that Yaakov could get the brachos is through subterfuge. As opposed to telling Yitzchak, I think that Yaakov should get the brachos. And trying to convince him. Somehow Rivka assessed that Yitzchak could not be convinced of this. But nonetheless, she very strongly felt that she was right. And that Yaakov should get the brachos, and not Esav. Yitzchak sees within Esav someone who deserves to get the brachos. because he sees good within Esav. And that sounds like a very radical thing to say. I mean, is there good in Esav? But there was good in Esav. He had the capacity not to develop in the way Yaakov did, but in develop in the way that he could. And I must say, I came across a fascinating medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni in Yehoshua, in section 23. And there it describes how all of the Avos were called Godol. It brings a pasuk about Avram. Avram is Godol in this week's Parsha Yitzhak, where Yigdal Ha'ish. And Yaakov was also Godol. Where do we see Yaakov referred to as Godol? It says the Yalkut Shimoni, because the pasuk says, Vayigdalu Hane'orim. Vayigdalu, they grew up. Except the Yalkut says, but that's Na'arim, that's Yaakov and Esav. Are you saying Esav was also Godol? Says the Yalkut, yes. Gam Esav Bichlal. He should have been a Godol in his own way. El Shekil Kalmasa. But he didn't. He ruined things for himself. But the notion that Esav was doomed from the start is a false notion. And in fact, Rivka herself was, this was what's behind her question. Went to so much trouble. And what does she mean by that? If there's so much trouble, so why me? And what's the meaning behind that question? Meshech Chochma explains, she's saying that if one of my children is such a rasha, so what's he doing in me? Maybe he's the Yishmael of the family. So then like Yishmael, so what, Yishmael was never carried by Sarah, he was carried by Hagar, and then he's at the side. if this second child of mine is another Yishmael, so how come I'm carrying both of them? But the answer is no. There's something in Esav. And Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, and as the Medrash says, this refers to the Geirim that would come out of Esav. If Geirim, Rabbi Meir was descended from Esav. If Geirim came from Esav, that means that there's some good in Esav himself. And therefore, Yitzchak feels that this can be developed. There's just one problem. And that is, in order to develop it, Esav will need to be interested in developing himself. And Esav has no interest in doing that. Because Esav's specialty is demonstrating that he doesn't need to develop, because he's the finished product already. Rashi famously tells us, it's the age of 40, he gets married. Just like Yitzchak, my father got married at the age of 40. We're just the same, even though aside from that one point of comparison, there's nothing, they have no shaykhahs with each other. Rashi quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, he's like the pig. When he crouches down, he sticks his hooves out, nice and kosher. And that's it, I'm the finished product. As long as he insists that there's nothing really that needs to develop within him, so it's impossible that any development will take place. And Rivka knows that, she knows what Esav is like. And she sees that any developing of good within him is impossible. He never looks inwards, only outwards. How does Rivka see this? Where Yitzchak doesn't see it. So the Mefarshim say because Rivka's seen it already. Rivka grew up with the Rebbe. Her brother Lavan is like this. He's the master. He's called Lavan. The Medrash says Lavan may not even be his real name. He's called Lavan because he could take anything and make it white. He could do anything wrong and it's all because he has this self-image of perfection. Can do no wrong. When Yaakov insists and for 7 years works for Rachel, but Rachel, Bitra, Ketana, couldn't be clearer. And Lavan gives him Leah. How can one escape the criticism, the indictment there? Yaakov comes to him 7 years. Lavan performs the impossible. He gets out of it in about 5 seconds. We don't do that sort of thing here. What, the younger before the older? It's not correct. That's actually quite, I'm quite troubled. By the notion that you would think of such a thing. I know you said Rachel, but that's not fair. I'm sure you weren't serious. I'm not sure what you meant by that, but we're trying to do the right thing here. You're bringing corrupt practices to us. This is all very uncomfortable. And as the Sforno adds, Lo yosachin bimkomenu, in our place the younger doesn't overtake the older. says his foreigner, meaning, I know your story, yes, poor Esav. He was the older one. You overtook him. That's very distasteful. You wish to bring that to here as well? Bimkomeinu, we try and really stay above board here. 7 years dissolved in literally 5 seconds. That's love. And therefore, because Rivka has seen this the whole time, and when the end of Vayetze, he's running after Yaakov to kill him. And when confronted, he says, I just wanted to kiss my grandchildren. I mean, that's what he says. I mean, so he's got a lot of Talmidim in the world. There are a lot of love on would-be's. Who take everything wrong and turn it into to the greatest good. So Rivka's grown up with this. And therefore, she sees that Esav will never, he'll never develop. He can't bring himself to develop. We don't know who believed that Esav was a perfect tzaddik. The only person we know for sure believed it was Esav. And he ultimately was the victim 100% of his own deceit. And therefore, Rivka sees things very differently than Yitzchak. Esav will only abuse the brachas. Yaakov, on the other hand, and it's in a sense part of the same question, Yaakov will now take over all roles of the Jewish people. He'll need the brachas in order to help him. And she does what it takes in order to get those brachas. And the rest, of course, is history. We'll leave it over there.